will be involved in transportation as one of the major impediments to developing some of the natural resources in the state.
Like ore?
Coal.
Fish?
Ore.
Mr. Chairman, could I ask?
Senator Coggan.
I was out of the room. Why did you delete all of the specific facilities on page one, section one?
Mr. Chairman, that's obsolete language. I know it sounds exciting. It's things we want to do. But they've revised the 1986 federal tax code, and that was a litany from the old tax code, and it no longer applies. And so we're taking this opportunity to hopefully clean up the statutes and get it good enough.
Okay. We've been joined by Senator Alford, and
he's doing the stuff he wouldn't do last year. I kind of like that part of it.
Well, you know,
takes time.
I think Senator Alford's probably been more involved in this program than most legislators have. Do you have any questions specifically?
No, I think the things that he's doing with the guarantee are real positive. I am not in favor of turning the power authority loose without legislative approval on bond issuance. We added provisions to kind of rein that in last round, and I think turning it loose again is a real mistake.
Senator Coghill.
On that subject, actually, it takes quite a while to get a program put together. What is the purpose of trying to go to below $25 million? Is there, do you have to give a commitment early on or without going to legislative approval?
Mr. Chairman, I would like to give you the rationale for the $25 million.
Yeah.
It's not scientific. And the rationale behind it was to look at projects that would be small enough where they would not have any real statewide or overbearing regional significance. And I think what I'm sensing is that obviously you think that I might have been a bit optimistic at 25, perhaps so, and that's certainly whatever the committee's pleasure may be on the dollar line. But I think it's important to give us some threshold because I think the possibilities exist that there may be smaller projects out there that are probably not worth the legislature's time. And what that dollar amount is, I don't know. Obviously, you all will probably perhaps do an amendment of something that's agreeable to you. But the sense there was that you needed some flexibility to work, and if for every nickel and dime project that comes along that can be done fairly quickly, you will delay that project with legislative approval. You are absolutely right, Senator. The larger projects, having legislative approval will, for all practical purposes, not be a delay, because by the time you do the design, the engineering, the permitting, the environmental, somewhere in there, there's going to be a legislative cycle.
That, Mr. Chairman, that was my point, is that we've got so many conditions on environmental impact statements and all the rest of it, it would seem to me that we don't really need to shortcut the legislative overview.
And Mr. Chairman, may I add one more point? The authority is subject to all of the environmental constraints and controls that any other developer would be. In fact, there's express language in here that I must be in conformance with all laws dealing with the development of any project. That was inserted at the time we did Red Dog, so that the environmental groups felt they wanted to make sure that all the resource agency constraints were on us, just like they would be on any other developer or consortium that were constructing a project.
I guess that's sort of an arbitrary figure, 25. How about 20? We go for 19.
Let's go ahead. Mr. Chairman, I don't want to predispose what the committee will do, but the changes would need to be made in two places. Page 6, lines 3 through 5 on page 8.2 is delete the dollar amount and insert the dollar amount that you were so inclined to use.
Which was that?
First one would be on page 6.
Yeah.
On line 4, I guess I can't read very well. Line 4. Yep. And the other one would need to be made on page, I believe it's page 8. At the very top, you'll see $25 million there.
Do we have a delinquency list or a foreclosure list or something that shows that there have been some bad?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yes, I do have delinquency numbers that I'll be happy to furnish the committee. I can just give you the overall idea on our financings. On the bond portfolio, all those loans that have been financed with proceeds of bonds, the total delinquency now is 24.5%, and that's as of 12/31/88. I could get you an update, but I can tell you the number hasn't changed dramatically. Plotting this on a graph, Mr. Chairman, there have been some like this, but we've seen no recognizable trend, either worse or better, in the commercial real estate market for the past 12 months.
How was it prior to that?
Oh, starting, Mr. Chairman, I believe if I could go back to my records, probably about 84 and 85, it was practically zero delinquency. The graph would look like this, and then it would look like this, up around 24%.
What's the delinquencies in the commercial banks, do you know?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would depend upon the bank.
Okay, is that an acceptable level? I guess that might be the proper question.
24% is an extremely high level.
It's high.
You compared it to Alliance Bank, we may look pretty well. If you compared it to Mr. Cuddy, we'd look like dog meat.
Well, what's your definition of delinquent then? At what point are you delinquent?
Mr. Chairman, I think an acceptable delinquency rate, and of course you have to define acceptable. You have to take in the economic circumstances surrounding it. Is 24% that bad when I've got such a concentration in the confines of the municipality of Anchorage? But if you were just asking what's the average delinquency rate like banks nationwide, I think you'd probably be looking at 5-6% somewhere in that domain.
Okay, well, at what point do you reach the state of delinquency? 30 days, 90 days,
oh,
2 years?
We break it 30, 60, 90 in total. What I'm giving you is the hardcore number. It's all of those cumulative added up. For example, as of 12/31, 30 to 59 was 2.87%. The 60 to 89 was 3.88%. Up to 90, 90 and over was 17.75. Cumulative was 24.5.
I was going to ask, Mr. Chairman, the delinquencies come from a base core of the industry, isn't it? It's your real estate market. Area, that made the 25%.
Mr. Chairman, it's primarily dominated by real estate mortgages in South Central Alaska. I think you should want to include the Metsu Borough. South Central Alaska.
Okay.
So I should point out, for what is worth, the least delinquencies, Mr. Chairman, we have in Southeast Alaska. It seems to be the strongest section of the economy.
But Mr. Chairman, the other thing is that you can't really rate the average delinquencies of the authorities with the bank, because when the bank goes over 35%, why they disappear.
They do that quite often.
Yeah, we've had several of them disappear.
Well, how do you handle the delinquencies? How do you keep solving that type of?
Mr. Chairman, good management.
And that's appropriation.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman, that was my other question. Is that how many of those delinquencies are related to bank failures? Any of them?
Mr. Chairman, I think a significant portion of the delinquencies are related to banks that have failed. For example, when Alaska National Bank of the North failed, I believe we were getting about $400,000 a month in receipts. By February of that year, we were, I think, down to less than $100,000 of receipts. The question was, how are we staying in business? The authority has two kinds of essential assets. We have loans and we have investments. And what we do is the investments are now producing cash that's carrying us. The loans, of course, are producing some cash, but not enough to carry the bonds. And historically how that occurred is the authority was capitalized back in, I believe, 1980 by the state of Alaska. We got contributed equity from the state of about $168 million. And that was a base we started with that invested and grew and grew. And that investment is now producing cash that's helping us last through this crisis. I think good management may also have a part of it.
And $160 million besides, huh? Well, do you have you foreclosed on property? Do you hold any property up there?
Yes, sir.
How do you handle that? Do you have a manager take care of it, or?
Mr. Chairman, if we have a bank, it's the bank's responsibility. If the banks are closed and there's no longer a financial institution, we hire property managers, be it Jack White Company or Marston, or in Fairbanks it would be a local property management company. It's still a participation loan, because usually when the banks fold, the FDIC inherits the portion that was owned by the bank. So the FDIC and ADA are then essentially partners, which has been quite difficult at times. And then you sell it if you can. If you don't, which you really can't now on a lot of properties, you pay the heat, light, insurance, and you have what's known as OREO, or other real estate owned.
What majority of that property is what type?
Commercial real estate buildings.
Commercial real estate.
The typical building, if you took one, would be a office warehouse borrowed by probably a contractor who was going to occupy a third and lease out 2/3, a couple thousand feet of office space, and 5,000 or 6,000 feet of warehouse space for his own operation. During the economic slump and recession, the small business person went out of, first he lost his tenants because they went out of business, then he went out of business, and we got the building back.
Dealing at shopping centers also?
I hate to admit it, but yes, I do have a few strip retail
shops.
You have
a few sitting around?
In fact, I do believe I have one in Sitka.
Why'd I ask that question?
That is my only delinquency in Sitka, I should point out.
Why did I ask that question?
Very good.
Do you have any in Juneau?
OREO and Juneau. Juneau's holding up quite well, as is all of Southeastern Alaska. I do have some OREO here. Most of it is in, I've got a couple of units, I believe, out in the Jordan Creek condo deal, out near the airport.
Yeah,
that didn't go quite as anticipated.
The obvious.
Oh, and I take it back, I have a medical clinic here. It was a good loan, but the doctor went somewhere. And now we've got the medical clinic, and I think we have that leased.
See, yeah, the doctor probably got run up because
insurance
high cost of malpractice insurance. They usually have to leave the country. And okay, well.
Mr. Chairman, just one item. I'm not quite sure procedurally how it's to be handled. Senator Fakes gave me an amendment. She's not here, so I assume.
I don't think you want to make the amendment. Maybe we should have a copy of it.
Did she give you a copy?
No.
I have nothing further than
Would you address the... Well, I don't suppose you had the letter from the Alaska Environmental Lobby.
I have talked to several people at the Alaska Environmental Lobby, but I don't have the letter, Mr. Chairman.
I don't think they want you to learn. You might be in development, probably.
They're anti-development.
But they're talking about the $25 million threshold, which I think is something that we could address. Okay, maybe
we'll
she's serious.
Tighten it up.
Okay, fine. Well, maybe she better testify. Becky?
No, I didn't write the paper.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you very much for sharing the document.
Yeah, okay, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Alan Phipps. I'm here today on behalf of the Environmental Lobby. I understand that you do have a copy of of our one-page general concerns. I need to apologize for one incorrect statement at the first paragraph where it talks about a lack of consideration for economic concerns. Obviously, this bill does include provisions for reviewing the economic viability of a project. We are concerned about the increase of the threshold to $25 million. And feel that projects of that size deserve legislative approval. Our major concern is the lack of public involvement that is provided for in this bill. It was stated that ADA is subject to the same sorts of laws that the other agencies are, but it should be pointed out that at this point there is no Alaska State Environmental Policy Act, for instance. So the agencies are not required to do an environmental or social impact analysis on projects that involve state monies or state lands. And DNR, for instance, is, just speaking from my own experience, is required to do a best interest finding when they dispose of state interests. But that best interest finding process does not require any sort of substantial analysis or public review and comment. So I'm not sure how that relates to ADA. I think recent events have vividly shown us that, you know, in the final analysis, it is the Alaskan people and the Alaskan public who are the ones that need to ensure that industry is done in a way that doesn't negatively impact other industries or people's lifestyles or their immediate surroundings. And we feel it's important that the public have an opportunity to be involved in public policy decisions as they relate to projects of this size. So we feel that translates into the maintenance of the lower threshold for legislative approval and some more substantial public process that includes an analysis of environmental and social as well as economic impacts of the project. Thank you. I'll be happy to answer questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It is an interesting question. Maybe, Bert, maybe you can tell us what the
Mr. Chairman, I would
local
like to
involvement as far as public policy goes at the present time.
AS 4488, Mr. Chairman, is kind of a long, complicated piece of legislation, and perhaps the gentleman only had the bill and did not have my existing companion statutes.
That's probably true.
If you want public involvement, Mr. Chairman, I'm Mr. Public Involvement. I mean, if you want public involvement, I have to practically create governments if I want to build a project. Just let me run through some of the restrictions, if I may. Anything I'm doing that's over $6 million, if it's in any type of municipality or organized government, I have to go to that government for permission to even finance anything there, much less build it. And if the city doesn't give their consent, it doesn't get done. Second, Mr. Chairman, on any project where I have an ownership interest that's in a organized municipality that's going to cost in excess of $10 million, the same rules apply. Not only must the municipality review the project and give its approval, but each and every contract concerning the project has to be approved. They don't have the power to amend it, but you have to go. And the law further dictates that the municipality hold a public hearing concerning the project. Now, the best one, Mr. Chairman, is if no local government exists, I create governments. It mandates that I create a regional resource advisory council, which we've done, and which we had to do with Red Dog, and which the governor appoints, and which we pay to come to meetings, in which we have our consultants there, in which we talk about the project, in which you have DEC, DNR, and everybody else talking about the project. You have the coastal zone people talking about the impacts. Up at Red Dog, we had the National Park Service, and just about everybody else. It was quite an event. So as far as public involvement, Mr. Chairman, goes, I mean, we are publicly involved. We're a public corporation. Everything we do is subject to the Open Meetings Act. The board meetings are open. There's nothing secret here at all. As far as the gentleman's concern on land use, the authority does not have the power of eminent domain. I'm not asking for it. I don't want it. So how do we deal with land use conflict? You have to deal with the landowners. If there's a private party and you have to get across his land and he's not going to let you across, then you ain't going to get the job done. Up at Red Dog, we had private property, we had state property, we had traded out National Park Service property. How do you deal with that? Well, you deal with it. And one of the controlling interests there is DNR and the National Park Service have a hell of a lot of influence on how that project was built and constructed. Now, I'm here to tell you right now, I think it was good influence in a way because it's a very sound, environmentally constructed project. So to create another layer of bureaucracy to deal with those concerns, I think, is just preposterous. I mean, I've got more oversight than I can carry now, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Coggin?
Well, he's correct. The process that you go through on the local government level has to have ordinances on each side. Each ordinance has three hearings, and if you want to really get an economic development project going, you have two strikes against you before you start.
Sounds like that's more public involvement. We get 95% of legislation we pass through the legislature.
I think so.
It's expensive. But I'm not asking that any of the existing language be repealed. I mean, it's there. We've learned to live with it. We've learned to work with it. The public's learned to deal with it. I have nothing further.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll look up Senator Fake's amendments, and we'll deal with this at a later date. Obviously, there's nobody here but you and I, Senator. I'm about to leave.
What do you mean? Well, I'm the one that's packed up.
Being adjourned, thank you.